Rebels are people who rise in opposition. You can find them in every walk of life, but art specifically is an area where rebellion can flourish into much grander things. Art destroys, creates chaos into beauty and old to new. And here at Weird Appalachia, none of us are, you know, regular Appalachian artists.
We rebels.
Yes.
Especially Brooke. She has pink hair now.
That just makes me crazy.
Yeah.
No, we're just going to go with rebel.
But yes, we're going to talk about rebel artist Pablo Picasso today.
Because when we started talking about who are the rebels, of the art world, Pablo Picasso was like number one. Because this guy reinvented himself so many times and
yes.
gave no cares about what people were going to think about it.
Well, before we get any further, girls, you know what we forgot? Our names, and I'm sure that y'all want to know who we are. I'm Jess.
I'm Erin.
And I'm Brooke.
And this is Weird Appalachia, if you didn't notice, but I'm sure you did because you clicked on it.
Yeah, well, we're rebelling today. We're just ditching the format.
You don't know my name, and I ain't going to tell you.
But Pablo Picasso, ultimate yes. rebel.
Yes.
Basically created modern art as we know it.
Yes.
No one was doing what he was doing.
I don't think anybody hasn't been touched by him just a little bit.
Well, I mean, what's funny is, like, even today, if somebody's a really good artist, they'll say, well, he's just a little Picasso.
Yes.
Yes. You know? Yeah.
Yes. He's permeated, like, popular culture everywhere. There's so many sayings, like, you've gone all Picasso. That's yes. a saying because of him, obviously.
Yeah.
And, I mean, like you said, any virtuoso is always referred to as a Picasso.
Pacablo. Wheat.
Picanha.
I believe Aaron's hungry.
Now I'm hungry.
But his father was a mediocre painter.
Yes, he was an art teacher.
Art teacher. And was so incredibly impressed with his virtuoso son that he basically just gave up.
Yes.
He gave up painting so that he could really focus on his son. He still taught, I guess.
Yes.
But.
Yeah. He was a prodigy. I mean, he was very talented, even at a very young age, two, three, and 4 years old. I mean, he could draw like no other.
Yeah. Well, in one of the docs that I read or watched, you don't read docs. Sorry. it said that he went to the bullfights and he came home, and that's how his dad figured out that he could actually draw.
Really?
Like, they went to the bullfight and he came home and he drew.
Yes.
The
bullfight.
Wow. You know, like the crowd and everything. And it was very detailed and it showed it from one of the books. And I thought it was amazing because, you know, like when you see a 4 year old draw, it was so different.
Yeah.
And it was so different than any other 4 year old's drawing.
Yeah.
I think his first oil painting was at the age of nine, I think.
Yeah, it was young.
Yeah.
Of a bullfight.
That's
yeah,
unreal. But that's what his dad wanted him to be. He wanted him to be, you know, go to school and be, you know,
yes.
a realism, you know.
And what they taught in art school, which they still teach today, is, you know, the classic.
The structure
way to do
and
things.
Basic. And
But it know. Did not interest him. He was a terrible student.
He
terrible.
Was so bored. He,
yeah.
like, ran off to Paris at one point.
Well, in grade school, he was just a horrible student and wouldn't listen, you know, wouldn't go by their structure. So they ended up putting him in a room every day with whitewashed walls and no windows.
Oh, God.
So he just kind of sat there and drew just one drawing after the other. But he said, like, when he talked about this one time in an interview, that he loved that. Because he was able to, you know,
he could just work with what he wanted to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that makes so much sense. Because you even like today, you take an extremely smart child and you put them in these classes that they're too smart for.
Yeah,
they get
they're
so
very
bored.
Yeah,
so that makes sense.
Yeah,
and when you think of his work, his body of work is so incredibly massive that he has his own periods.
When he passed away, I think they said that he had over 50,000 pieces of work still that were mixed in so many different genres, like the sculptures and ceramics and, you know, different periods that he went through and sketchbooks that, you know, nobody had ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just so crazy. And then they've divided everything up between
mm-hmm.
his children and some of the exhibits in France. But oddly enough, you know, like a lot of his work did not become famous until the 80s. Like, yeah. Nobody really liked some of his stuff until the 80s.
It's because people had to digest it that long. They've had this classical stuff just that's all they knew. To see someone shake it up so much, which is off-putting.
I mean, it really, I could see it coming out in the 80s just because 80s was all about, you know, like bright colors and everything had, yes, you know.
Angular.
Yeah. A lot of different shapes, and it was just all about breaking stuff up, and it's a lot like his work. So mm-hmm. I could see where people could get inspired by stuff like that mm-hmm. through that age. But yeah. I mean, I just, it was odd to me, like so many generations missed out on loving his stuff.
Yeah, but he was very famous when he was alive.
Yeah.
He was incredibly famous. Like, I asked what she thought, because I thought, you know, he got so famous at a point that anything he made, people would buy for millions.
Yeah.
While he was living. And I wonder, and I want to ask you the same question, Jess. Do you think that, was he still a rebel at that point? Do you think he's still breaking the rules? Do you think or do you think that he was just like, I can make anything?
Well, honestly, I would say that he might have just been trying to see what line he, you know, couldn't cross. Like, you know, oh, I've crossed this line, so mm-hmm. I'm going to see if I can cross this other one. Mm-hmm. You know, just kept giving himself a little bit further, pushing people just a little bit further, just to see how, you know, how they would react to his new stuff.
What do you think, Brooke?
I don't know. I kind of disagree with that. I agree on some level, but I think that he was very true to himself. And I think that people change over lifetimes, and they try. A lot of times people, like as an artist, as a musician, it doesn't matter, as any kind of artist, they tend to try to please people. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a mistake.
It is.
I think why he was so famous and loved is because people looked at his pieces, no matter what style they were in, and they could see that he put everything into them. Mm-hmm. And he done what he wanted to do, not what, you know, the person next to him wanted him to do, or the person who had millions of dollars that wanted to buy whatever he was going to make wanted him to do. He done what he wanted to do.
Yeah.
If he was commissioned to do a portrait, he done it in his style. He didn't do it the way they wanted him to do it.
Yeah, I think I agree with you.
I think that in that itself makes him a rebel artist.
I can agree with that.
Yeah.
Brooke just changing opinions.
Yeah. I still believe that he saw, you know, lines that needed to be crossed.
Oh,
with
yeah.
People,
well, yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely.
His first wife, Olga, was like very high and prestige because she was what, a dancer?
Yeah.
I think that's what it was. And she just liked being with high society and stuff like that.
She was all about that high life.
He really didn't like that.
No.
No,
he liked to be in the slums a little bit.
He came up in the brothels, you know, and I mean, obviously, he loved the ladies.
He was a womanizer.
That's one of the series that, you know, that changed him a little bit when he moved to France and he was in the brothels. So,
oh, yeah.
I kind of sound like I said waffle right there.
It shaped who he was. Him living in Paris when he was young really shaped who he was, and losing his friend.
Mm-hmm.
Was the catalyst for the blue period.
Yeah.
Which is some of my favorite work.
That is my favorite work.
That was his first period that he started out with.
Which was about 1901 to 1904.
Yeah.
And from what I understand, his friend had fallen madly in love with a girl.
Mm-hmm.
And according to something I watched, he was impotent.
Yeah, that's the same thing I heard.
And he loved her so much, but he couldn't reciprocate, you know, what she wanted. And so she didn't want to be with him. So he comes in, he tries to shoot her, you know, and she dodges, and then he shoots himself.
Wow.
And losing someone so important to him, because I think it was like his best friend ever, it sparked such sorrow in him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you could see it in the work.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Everything was painted with different shades of blue, every single painting that he did during that time.
I mean, like the paintings of his actual friend, like him laying, and you can see the bullet hole where his friend shot himself.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and there's like, I don't know, there's a couple of different versions of the way that he painted that, because he did that a lot. He would paint or draw and do that
looking for the perfect way to present the form.
Yeah, but his Blue Period has to be one of my favorites. One of the ones that I wrote down was The Old Guitarist.
And that's the one most people would
It's
recognize.
One of the most famous ones, and it's beautiful.
I mean, it is. And you can get emotion from that, not just by the color, but by, you know, the whole demeanor.
Well, the man is old, and he's skinny, and you can see his wrinkles, and he's holding the guitar in such a really strange, awkward, acrobatic kind of way. Even.
And this is, I think, some of the earliest parts where he starts messing with proportions and starts, because it's just this jaunt, angular way that he's holding this guitar. It's not natural at all, but it's so much more emotional than just an actual realistic portrayal.
It's very emotional. I've never seen it in person.
I'd love to.
Me too.
I've never seen any of his work in person. It's astonishing.
Oh, yeah. Another one from that time period was The Blue Nude, which everyone loves.
Yeah.
It's very simple. It's a simple sketch, but the way he painted the blue onto it and the texture kind of set it off. Everything during this time was just anguish. Everything he painted.
And this was the time period when he was not interested in trying to capture the moment like all painters have been trying to do before, trying to realistically portray what they saw. He wanted to portray what he felt.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And he did. I mean, you can look at that and just feel it.
You still feel it. Even today, I mean, you're like, it's strange to me how that long ago people still had these kind of the same feelings, even though we live in such a different world today. But I can look at some of his paintings and get that, you know, that anguish and grief and just be like, I know how that feels, you know?
Yeah.
I think that's why his Blue Period is too. It's some of my favorite work, but I think it's some of his most famous work because of that. So many people can identify.
Yeah,
they can. Like, I mean, everybody has had depression in some way or form.
Yeah.
So, like, you can get that come across from all of his Blue Period paintings, so.
So when he met, and I'm gonna butcher this name with my banjo accent, but he falls in love with Fernand Oliver, and that's the catalyst of the Rose Period, the love, the warmth.
Yeah.
He's finally rediscovering
love. So many warm colors.
And it's beautiful work.
It is.
But I don't know, I'm one of those people that, like, in my own life, when I'm sad or angry, I feel like my work's much better.
Yeah.
And for me, just as a viewer, I feel so much more of a strong connection to his sorrowful work. And that's unfair as a viewer to expect your artist to be sad and torn up to make that kind of art.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's stronger to me. I can't.
I think it's because most people have a stronger emotion that comes out when you're depressed or you're mad or you're angry at something. It's just a stronger emotion. Like, happiness is a very strong emotion, but there's, to me, in life, you have very small moments of being truly happy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the opposite side, there's so many more moments that you could probably point out that you've gotten mad or depressed.
Or is it just because the emotions so strongly stand out to you more?
Yeah. Well, most people can remember the bad stuff over the good ones.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, yeah.
But I find myself, when I'm in a very good place and I'm very happy, I create lots of beautiful things. They're very pretty to look at.
Yeah.
But I feel like I get a much stronger reaction when I'm in pain and I create.
But frankly, in my opinion, this period of his life, this period of his art, was the least mesmerizing to me.
Yeah.
I didn't enjoy it that much.
I mean, it's pretty.
It's pretty.
It's beautiful.
But
it's pretty.
Even the warm colors he does use, they're dark. And they're just dank and just not for me.
I'm not near as impressed with it. And I'm not in any way trying to discredit, you know, it's amazing work. But
yeah.
When he starts getting into, like, when him and Brock invent cubism.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
That's when things start really shaking up and getting crazy.
Well, the first painting ever that he ever, no one had ever seen anything like this whatsoever before in the art world. And Aaron said earlier, I'm probably going to butcher this, but I'll try. he done a painting. Picasso done a painting, and it's five prostitutes. And the title is Les Demoiselles d'Avignon. I'm pretty sure that's how you say it.
That sounds fancy and right to me. Very right. Well, better than I would do.
Anyway. It's a five prostitutes, but it's done, I mean, completely out of proportions.
It's bizarre.
It is. And it's the first one that ever portrayed any of that cubism style. So when Brock saw this painting, he said that it was like swallowing gasoline and spitting fire. That's how he felt.
I can see why.
Yeah, because he had never seen anything like this before.
Hold himself up in a room for, I don't even know how long. A very long time.
They both did, actually. They both, stayed, I think it was a hotel or somewhere, they stayed in, or no, it was one of the studios that they had. They stayed in there for weeks at a time.
Yeah, but this one in particular, this painting, I believe he locked himself up alone and just...
Yeah, Brock did not see it till it was done.
Yeah.
And when he presented it, I mean, it's massive painting. Mm-hmm. It's I've seen footage of it in a gallery, and it takes up almost the entire half of the wall.
It's so abstract. And he's painting this real raw scene. I mean, it's five prostitutes,
Yeah.
And they're all naked, but you can't really see anything because it's so abstract. It's taken things apart, taking the human form apart and kind of just putting it back together, but making something beautiful out of it.
He was a master of taking a form and abstracting it to a point that it didn't resemble what it was anymore, but you could still tell.
And he didn't go too far with it.
Yeah.
Like, he done it the perfect way.
It was restraint. He could show restraint.
I kind of giggled a little bit at a documentary because when it was talking about, more of his personal life and stuff, that he had a mistress that was underage, he actually used this type of artistry to hide her face
really?
In the paintings because he used her as a model so much because she was underage.
Yeah, and they couldn't be public with it whatsoever.
And he was trying to hide it from his wife anyway. But I thought it was dude, that you little minx. Robbing the cradle.
Magdaddy
Picasso. Little womanizer.
Yeah.
Always with the ladies. So it only makes sense that his first, venture into cubism was prostitutes.
Yeah.
His favorite pastime.
Yeah. And it carried over into a lot of his sculptures. So.
Oh, yeah.
He spent an enormous portion of his life just fascinated with female form.
Yeah.
And seeing how he could reconstruct
it. Even the female face.
Yeah.
I mean, anything.
Honestly, one of my favorite sculptures that he's done is called Woman's Head. And the whole sculpture is not made, because he said he didn't make the sculpture from visual. He did it from textural, what a woman felt like.
Oh,
so
wow.
That's how he made the sculpture. And I was like, oh my God, that's so interesting. But it's a beautiful sculpture. And you can tell, but it's not, I'm sorry, I'm hitting the mic because I'll talk with
She's
my
so excited. She's all I'm getting eaten by gnats and we're sweating and Jess is hitting the mic. So
we keep it real.
Listen, y'all, we ain't professional. Or we try not to be sometimes. Anyway, but that sculpture to me just kind of spoke to me because, last week when we were talked about the Venus of Willendorf.
Yes.
It really resembled that because, it wasn't as detailed as she was, mm-hmm. but you could see the female form.
Mm-hmm.
Suggestion of it.
Just to know that he'd done that by texture alone, to know what a woman feels like when you have her in your hands or whatever.
Oh, my God. That's crazy.
That's really unique.
It is. Because I said it earlier, art was always being, capture what you see, capture what you see. I had an art teacher tell me, you're not a slave to what you see.
Mm-mm.
You can take your subject. You can change it.
Yeah.
To make it your vision of what you want to get across. And he was absolutely the master of that.
That's the whole point, in my opinion, of being an artist.
Yeah. It's through your own eyes and experience that you put on your paper.
Your own emotions.
Yeah.
I mean, you just... It should be about you. If you're making the art, should be about you.
Because we all perceive everything so differently.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you're just trying to capture realism, you're just capturing something a camera can capture.
Well, like, I love, like, I looked up some of the things, like, he said, like, he's got a bunch of different quotes, but one of my favorites is that he said that the purpose of art is washing the dust off daily life, off your soul.
I've read that.
I love that.
I just, I mean, that spoke to me because you all know me. Like, I don't plan things out very much. Or if any, most of the time when I'm spray painting, I don't really plan it out. So it's just whatever it is.
That's true, though. Most artists can probably really relate to that because it's like a crutch, at least for me.
I don't remember where.
I paint so I don't punch people.
I don't remember where I saw it. I think it was in one of the documentaries I watched doing research for the episode that once photography became, you know, what it is.
Yeah.
He lost all interest in trying to make anything realistic because he's like, what's the point? Oh, yeah. That's what a camera does.
Yeah. Well, he was a pretty good photographer, too, because, like, the same mistress that he was trying to hide in a lot of his paintings, he took and made a flip book of her.
Yes, I saw it.
It was really interesting. And she was very beautiful. And, I mean, you know, not very many people probably did that then.
Well, he's a good-looking man.
He really was in his younger years. I'm not, I'm sorry.
I thought he was in his older years.
I'm not a geezer lover.
I like me some Opie Fox every now and then.
Yeah. Honestly, he's a little baldy, but
honestly.
That's all right, bald's beautiful.
I know this is going to sound really mean, but like old people are like babies and puppies to me.
Oh, like, you just want to take care of them.
Aw, can I pinch your cheeks?
Us perverts over here like, hey.
Hey, apparently he could still.
He knew what he was doing.
In the 90s, yeah, so.
Yeah, he was, oh gosh, he was staying with it well up until he just gave out, I believe.
I mean, like, he had, like, he's got, like, 4 children from, like, I don't know, like, a bunch of mamas.
Yeah. But beyond that, I mean, later in life, he met Salvador Dali, he met Matisse, he met all these people, and eventually he started working in surrealism.
Yes, which he done that for a long time.
And I love surreal everything.
His version of surrealism is still different, though.
Yeah.
Maybe. You know, he done that mural, which kind of sparked some controversy.
Guernica?
Yeah.
My favorite.
Yeah.
This is my favorite.
So that's your favorite piece?
Guernica. I remember as a child, and eternal nerd, I know, but I remember taking a test, like one of the state tests we had to take, an open response. We had to review Guernica and tell what we saw and why we thought the artist did that.
Yeah.
And it spoke to me then as a child.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's so raw and powerful, and it's enormous, enormous painting.
Yes. Well, I mean, like, even he said, you know, like, he was so good at realistic drawings and stuff that as a child, you know, he drew realistic and he was so good at that, but it took his whole life to actually draw like a child.
Yes. Yes. That's the best quote.
I love that quote.
It's so good. But for me, like, Guernica, that's his masterpiece, in my opinion.
It really is.
It is transcended. People still protest wars holding images of Guernica. And you see the pain. You see the mother that's lost her child. And it looks like the emotion. It doesn't look like what a woman would look like. It looks like what she's feeling in that moment. Her face is melting.
You know, like, at that time, I don't even know. Like, I don't even think he went back to Spain in his later years. But, you know, when the Civil War was going on because of that. And, you know, you could just feel what he was feeling and how he felt about
His inner turmoil was all over the canvas. And I saw in one of the documentaries I watched, it's damaged.
Oh, really?
It has holes and scratches, but you know, that just kind of adds to it. It has its own battle scars.
Yes,
it does. That's wild.
I love things like that, you know.
I love things.
The last time we went to the Earth Day show, and Grayson, I, my kids, you know, when you have children, you can't leave things around. Anyway, they accidentally spilled, like, a cup of water that I had laying next to my desk, and it kind of wrinkled it up and stuff. So, like, when I got to the gallery, I just kind of like, yeah, I like it. So, I'm going to wrinkle the rest of it.
Yeah. That happened to me once, too.
Yeah.
We, when I had my first solo at the Mountain Arts Center, I'd done a bunch of these wood paintings, and Brooke owns this one now.
Yes.
But I packed them all together, and one of them, the metal from the piece in front of it, it's put a big scratch all the way down, like a big, jagged, crazy-looking scratch. And I was so upset, and I was like, you know what? It's fine. I just made more scratches around it, made it look intentional, because sometimes you just got to roll with it.
Yeah, I love it. Hanging in my bedroom.
Mm-hmm. But so, beyond, I mean, obviously Guernica is like the end all be all, but another one of my favorites is the portrait of Francoise.
Yeah.
It's,
yeah,
really, it's good. So simple. Just beautiful, very delicate lines. Her face is slightly abstracted, but still very beautiful. And you can see he loves her.
Yes.
Another mistress. Another mistress later in life. But I think it was created in 1946, and it looks to me like the style of cartooning that people try to do now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Like the, you remember Kim Possible?
Yes.
It that does. Style.
It looks very much like that.
Yeah. It's beautiful, though.
Yeah. It is. It's very pretty. I particularly love when he was, you know, that quote you were saying earlier.
Yeah.
When he was in his later life. You know, all of his paintings started to portray kind of real simplistic style. Yeah. I mean, he just kind of let go of everything. It was like, you know, he kind of went back to child.
Yes.
And that's when he said that quote, you know, at 4 years old, I could draw just as well as Raphael. But, you know, it took me this many years to learn to draw like a child.
Yeah.
And he used crayons.
It's heartbreaking.
And pencils, and that's pretty much it.
Yeah, I
in,
think
in
that
his
even,
drawings and stuff.
I mean, I think that even the day that he passed away, he had his book in his lap. And
he did. He created till he died.
That is awesome.
It's kind of heartbreaking, really, to see. It's inspiring and heartbreaking at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like a Benjamin Button type of journey
it
through
is.
Art.
Oh, it's like he started, and you know, at the wrong age, you know, and kind of went
just
backwards.
Worked backwards.
Yeah. Yeah. But my favorite, and I love all of his work, but my favorite is the self-portrait facing death.
Oh, yeah.
Of him, you know, when he was super old. It was like a year before he died when he done this. And it's just crayon and pencil. It's all. And it's real simple, abstract, but simple. And it's just beautiful. Because, I mean, when you look at it, you know it's him. But, you know, it's not realistic at all. And he just has these harsh, kind of droopy, just sad eyes, you know. And I love it because, I mean, he knows death is coming. I mean, he lived to be old.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he can probably feel that, especially as an artist. I mean, you can.
Yeah. And as a viewer, you can see he's a man dealing with his own mortality.
Yes.
Just like the David Bowie Lazarus.
Yes, exactly.
I still can't listen to it. I still can't.
It's amazing. You need to listen.
But he was a rebel until the day he died.
Yes, he was.
He did everything his own way until the day he died. And he made an impact on the women that he loved.
Very much so.
Yeah. Actually, a couple of them committed suicide.
Yeah. After he passed away.
Wild.
Yeah.
And one was, you know, was long since the relationship was over.
Yeah.
She said that the love of her life was dead, so she did that. And it makes you wonder, you know, someone who had that big of an impact.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, do we still have that? Do we still have people like that? Do you think we still have artists like that in the world?
Honestly, I don't really know because, you know, like I've seen... It was on Instagram the other day, and I was looking at this photo, and it was so ridiculous because you see these beautiful paintings, and they're so meticulous, and everybody is, I mean, you know, back then it was just like, you know, they would work on them for days before they would show anybody, or even weeks, months, years.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have at the bottom of modern art, which I don't knock modern art. Some of it I don't get, but I'm not going to knock it.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have this... you know, ball sitting out in a room somewhere.
And Brooke rolls her eyes.
You know what I mean?
Can't like, take it. I can't take
there's
it.
Just no comparison to that. Like, here, I'm going to throw this out in this room and call it some weird-ass name.
Yeah, I get you. You know what I mean? And it's so subjective, you can't argue with them.
Yeah, I mean, art, you can't really argue anything in art because they can do anything. Somebody can take a piece of tape and tape it on the wall and call it some exotic name.
Honestly,
and,
true.
And it's like, oh, this is so avant-garde.
I'm telling these girls all the time, and I talk about this movie all the time. Please watch. Art School Confidential.
I need to watch it.
Oh, it's so good. Because the main character loves Pablo Picasso. Loves him from a child. You know, his school project. He stands up and he's dressed as Pablo Picasso and he's like, I'm amazing. I can draw anything super realistic, but I choose to draw stuff like this. And I can have sex with any woman I want because I'm so great. goes to art school and then no one likes his work because it is so traditional.
Yeah.
And he just can't wrap his mind around why everyone likes this thing over here. It looks like someone drew it with crayon.
Yeah. Well, back to what you said, though, I think the problem with art making an impact today, some artists make an impact, and I don't think any artist today that I personally know of has made an impact like Picasso or Van Gogh. No. Or
I don't know if anyone can at this point. I feel like everything's kind of been said.
That's the problem. It's not that everything's been said. I mean, our lives are different now. There's a lot to be said about what goes on in the world today that's completely different from what was going on then.
Yeah.
But and it's going to keep evolving and things are going to keep changing. But the problem is that we have social media now. There's Instagram, and Facebook, and it's just constant. It's constant, like hundreds of thousands and thousands and thousands. Like
it's just oversaturation.
It's just too much.
The work of Picasso outlives the physical body of Picasso. Yes. His work of art will live on forever. The most rebellious artist we could possibly think of to be the first in our series of rebels in the art world. Thank you so much for listening. And if you'd like to see more of our work, you can find us on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook. I am Erin Elise Conley on everything.
And I'm Brooklyn Messer Artist on most things, except for Twitter, but I never get on there, so don't follow me.
She has nothing to say. And I am Jess Slayer Art on Instagram and Jess Sawyer on Facebook. So
yeah, it's not a typo. It's intentional.
Yeah, it really
is. She is a slayer.
I slay the art.
So yeah, go follow us and stay weird.